Welcome back, one and all, to What You're Not Listening To, the audio educational and anthology series here on aceofspadespdx.com. And I'm your host, show producer, webmaster, audio engineer, researcher, video promo producer, and writer, Daddy Ben Bear, Ben Brown Jr. And this is broadcasting on the fourth week of November. And for our fans outside of the United States, this is the week we have Thanksgiving. You know, the dead bird and all the sides and all your relatives you can't stand get together and somehow you make it work, right? Well, of course, by now you know the coronavirus is completely and absolutely out of control, the way Dr. Fauci said like a half a year ago. I gotta say is this, children, if you have to reschedule, please do. All right, you can always reschedule a Thanksgiving. You can always reschedule a meal. The next family gathering you don't want to have is someone's funeral, particularly your own. All right, with all that being said, let's get into this week's show, shall we? And today we're looking at the music of degenerates that became a phenomenon. Birthed from the same circumstances that gave rise to the UK punk scene, the new wave of British heavy metal took the sound of what was called degenerate trash by the press and transformed it into a worldwide phenomenon. And note, there are no ballads in this program. Repeat, no ballads. I say this on a regular basis. You'll hear me open a show with this, and today you're going to find out exactly where that came from. Speed metal, power metal, dark metal, thrash metal, subgenres of what was once a heavy and loud blues-based rock increased its speed and attack with a laser-sharp focus and intensity during the last years of the 1970s and early 1980s in the United Kingdom during the rock revolution called the New Wave of British Heavy Metal, also known as Nawabim. In 77, punk rock had taken a stranglehold on the UK music scene, giving it a much-needed shot in the arm. It wasn't as if metal bands had disappeared. However, by the time of the rise of punk, many classic metal bands, like Black Sabbath, were a shell of what they once were. Interestingly, the same forces that shaped the birth of the punk scene, such as high unemployment, a recession, and union strikes, also birthed Nawabim. Nawabim, long brewing in the underground scene as a reaction to punk and disco music, also took seed simultaneously during the rise of these genres. The music press loved punk bands, but not metal music, and were incredibly hostile to the latter's fan base. Hip music magazines derided the metal genre without realizing that the most exciting new loud music was right under their noses and would have an even bigger impact on the industry than the old guard would realize. However, by 79, punk rock had all but lost steam and was considered anathema by the mainstream music press, who had then moved on to new wave and electronic acts of the period. What was just a couple of years prior a direct reaction to the social and economic ills of the country had crashed with a resounding thud. Labels that had once courted the sound now ran from it altogether, and many of the acts that had come to define it were quickly gone or had changed their sound to one more radio-friendly, especially, and this is important, when the economy started to recover. If you hadn't guessed, the mainstream UK music press consistently earns its incredibly fickle reputation and deems themselves the ultimate tastemakers, throwing many under the bus when the hot new thing, which they christen themselves, comes around. Metal fans of this new movement really weren't interested in mainstream coverage, largely due to press hostility. They were a fairly insular group, telling each other about new releases like a secret among close friends. The fans were called mothers and judged bands by typically two things: no ballads on your releases and a high-energy live show with speaker-shredding volume. If you didn't pull it off live, you went nowhere. Their fashion was almost always denim jackets with patches sewn upon them, something adopted from the late 1960s California biker culture. Interestingly, not only were the first iteration of these bands almost all on independent labels, many were actually self-financed as well, with groups like Iron Maiden's Soundhouse tapes being heavily bootlegged after initial pressings sold out. This scene also birthed a whole new specialty press devoted to Nawabim in the UK, with Kerrang, originally a supplement to the Weekly Sounds, is now considered the greatest and most respected heavy rock publication in history, and since the start of the millennium, the UK's best-selling weekly music rag. Take that, New Musical Express. The movement would lose steam for a variety of factors, as all new music movements do after acts signed to major labels, leave home on long tours, and received increased media attention. Some, like Diamond Head and Def Leppard, radically altered their sound to appeal to broader audiences to varying degrees of success. It was, for a time, glorious, loud, fast, special, and ours. Unlike the hair metal movement of the U.S. that followed it, the lyrical concepts weren't about sex and women, but often fantasy, evil, war, violence, and just plain being in a loud rock and roll band. And of course, your parents hated it. In the words of my late mother, Mrs. Anna Brown, I don't understand why anyone has to spin those records backwards to make them do something crazy. Every time my son puts on that Iron Maiden, I just want to go out and kill somebody. And kicking off this week's program is a group from Barnsley, about halfway between Leeds and Sheffield. The album this track is taken from saw them break into the U.S. market for the first time. Incidentally, the cover of the LP was designed by none other than Oscar-nominated director Ridley Scott. This is, from the album, The Power and the Glory. This Town Rocks, from 1983, by Saxon, and we will see you in about 30 minutes.
This is
And welcome back to Children of the Revolution. Woo! What an amazing 30 minutes. Wait till we got here what we got planned next. And today, the week of Thanksgiving here in the United States, fourth week of November, we're looking at the music of degenerates that became a phenomenon. We're looking at the new wave of British heavy metal from the early, late 70s and early 80s. And I'm still your host and all-around monkey bear, Ben Brown Jr., and let's recap what we've heard in the first part of our show, shall we? Kicked it all off with a musical question, I gather. This Town Rocks from 1983, Saxon, The Power and the Glory. Following that, from 1981, Venom, with the title track to Welcome to Hell. Venom were part of a number of acts that never really broke through to the mainstream that were signed to Newcastle imprint Neat Records, a small but highly influential indie label. The album this track is taken from is often cited as the first black metal or dark metal album in history, replete with a pentagram and a goat's head on the cover. Following that, from 1979, the single A-side to the single Sledgehammer by Sledgehammer. And this group hails from the town of Slow Berkshire, about 32 kilometers west of London. And this song and band used a common trick among Nuwaban bands. Name one of your first tracks after your band name. I mean, Angel Witch did this, Iron Maiden, Motorhead, and the list goes on, seriously. They recorded only a handful of singles, but find a new ways to find fans through their tracks ending up on compilation albums. Following that, The Tigers of Pantang, the Tigers with a Y, Spellbound was the name of the album from 1981, Gangland. Formed in 1978 and disbanding in 1987, this group with the Asian-sounding name actually hails from the northeastern town of Whitley Bay. They took their name from animal characters in a Michael Moorcock novel, and for our Blue Oyster Cult fans, you know that name very well. Their success was stalled after disagreements with their label, which held up their releases. Following that was the B-side to the Buried Alive single. The song is Blitzkrieg by Blitzkrieg from 1981. A group that has endured a long history, they have formed, broken up, and reformed numerous times, often with new members. They can actually count 39 different people who have passed through their ranks. They were also one of the Nuwaban groups signed to Neat. Following that, from the debut album by Iron Maiden, this is Iron Maiden, and no, the song is not Iron Maiden, but Sanctuary from 1980. I came really close there, let me tell you, of putting that in there. Tying with another band in the survey, Def Leppard, in terms of total album sales, both over 100 million worldwide, Iron Maiden succeeded at this test by never gaining any traction on American radio or on the singles charts. They did it through word of mouth and easily the best live performances of any band anywhere, and they are still going strong. Following that, the song we just heard from 1980 from the album Demolition by Girls School, and that was Demolition Boys. And quick, name the longest surviving all-female group in history. If you answered this band, Girls School, you would be correct. One of only two female bands of the Nuwaban era, the other being Rock Goddess, this band benefited greatly from an association with Motorhead via recording with the band and touring with them. And we're going to be kicking off the second half of our show here. Though some Nuwaban purists might call our next act too old for the Nuwaban tag, forming in 1975 and releasing their first album of that year, they nonetheless became the first British metal band to have a number one LP on the UK charts with No Sleep Till Hammersmith in 1981. And their first album was very much blues influence, and with the addition of Fascinated Clark by their second one, they really changed their sound dramatically. From 1979... this is the title track to Bomber by Motorhead, and we'll see you just before the grand finale.
Ain't no hope in hell, nothing gonna No!
All right, everyone. Welcome back to our religious program. Children of the Revolution. Actually, we have one planned next week. We're going to be looking at gospel music from the American South. Yes, on the Gospel Truth label, if all things panning out the way they do. But right now, let's get back into this, our Thanksgiving week show here. Fourth week of November. Still your host, Daddy Ben Bear, Children of the Revolution, and you're still listening to What You're Not Listening To, the Audio Educational and Anthology Series, and the new album, new wave of British heavy metal, where the music of degenerates became a worldwide phenomenon. Kicked off the second part of our show with Bomber by Motorhead from 79. Following that, Rock Brigade by Def Leppard from their debut full-length LP, On Through the Night. And yes, ladies, they were always pretty, and at one time, pretty heavy as well. Starting off on a self-financed EP on a label they formed themselves, the band recorded their first album for Mercury, which this track is taken from. After working with Mutt Lange on their follow-ups, they would bring heavy metal into the mainstream in 1983. Following that, from the EP Satan Serenade, this is Satan Serenade, follows that from 1980 by the band called Quartz. And originally starting out as Bandy Legs and supporting other British metal and rock acts on tour, such as Black Sabbath, it was Sabbath's Tony Iommi who produced the band's self-titled debut as Quartz in 77. Interestingly, the band's keyboard, Jeff Nichols, would leave the band in 79 and join Black Sabbath for their Heaven and Hell LP in 1980, the one where Ronnie James Dio first recorded with the band. Following that, from 1980, was Trespass. Metal from Mothers was the name of the album. Volume 2, Cut Loud, was originally on a single. And hailing from the eastern town of Sudbury, Trespass released only a handful of singles in their first incarnation and all on indie labels with small sales. The band were never commercially viable, and all the members held day jobs. This track ended up on the second of the highly influential new album compilations, Metal from Mothers. And the song we just heard... Yes! The band was Angel Witch. The album was Angel Witch. The song was Angel Witch. And I'm pretty sure, goddamn sure, that the year was also Angel Witch. But no, it was 1980. And this is possibly the catchiest new album single of all time. And hell, it's probably one of the catchiest singles in history of any genre. Angel Witch were never commercially viable during their initial run. After this, their debut single, EMI, dropped them. They broke up, reformed, and are favorites at metal festivals with crowd attendees who weren't even born in the 1980s. Can you believe it? Something to be said for, you know, sticking to your guns, right? And all good things must come to an end. Yes, very loud end here. And this is our last track. It's a band that coulda, shoulda, woulda, except they moved too quickly for their initial fan base. Their debut LP had no cover and no title and was often called Lightning to the Nations because it was the first track on the self-financed debut LP. They changed their sound from new album to mainstream rock by the time of their second release, which caused their initial rabid fan base to desert them. And if you have questions, feedback, comments, love letters, dedications, and requests are always welcome. Please drop me a line at daddybenbear, one word, daddybenbear@gmail.com. Love to you all, and please be safe, wear a mask, and limit your social gatherings as much as possible. Again, once this is all taken care of, we can always make up for this time. Can't make up for losing you, though. Love to you all, and this is from 1979, Diamond Head with Am I Evil?